Hello everyone, and welcome to our first sample deal discussion. In this example, we cover how to discuss a sell-side divestiture transaction in investment banking interviews. When you're discussing transactions in interviews, you need to think like a reporter and address the who, why, how, and what of each deal you worked on, adding in the when and where if appropriate as well. Once you've set up your story and addressed those questions, you should continue to think like a storyteller and detail how the deal progressed and what your unique contribution was before reaching the conclusion. Although this example comes from our interviewee's investment banking experience, you can apply similar strategies if you've had private equity or hedge fund experience and you want to discuss an acquisition or investment you worked on. Now let's jump into the discussion and see how to apply these strategies.
Okay, great. So just looking at your resume, I see you worked full-time at a local boutique investment bank this past year. So, I already know a bit about your background from what you went through earlier. So maybe you can just pick one of your deals and start off by just giving me an overview of the company you represented and kind of how the deal process got started.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll just start with the first deal list on my resume. And it's a sell-side M&A deal where we've been advising the seller for the past year. It hasn't been announced yet, so I can't give any specific names or dollar amounts, but I can talk about as much as possible here. So the company we were representing is a Big Four accounting firm, and it's specifically working to divest a division of itself that sold litigation and forensic services to financial services companies. And just to give you a rough idea of the size of the division, it was generating around $300 million in revenue and about $50 million in EBITDA. And it was growing about 10 to 15% each year with margins in that same range. The business itself was going through a shifting from this services focus to providing more web-based type software that automated the process and allowed clients to kind of solve their problems remotely, which really boosted their revenues.
Okay, I see. So it sounds like a pretty promising business. It's not a huge company yet, but pretty substantial revenue, pretty good growth. So, why would this accounting firm want to divest a promising growing division like this?
Well, we were originally engaged for two reasons, and one was that basically, as the business expanded beyond the services focus, it wasn't really in the accounting firm's core area of expertise, and it kind of became uncertain of how to deal with regulatory issues surrounding business, and especially since it often created conflicts of interest. And the other primary reason was the inbound interest the firm would receive from these legal software and content management companies. It quoted a very attractive potential purchase price to our client, and we were engaged just to see if we could generate interest from anyone else to get a higher price.
Okay, good. So, it sounds like the business was growing beyond the parent company's expertise, and they wanted to see if you could get a more attractive price than what the original inbound interest had generated. So, what kind of sell-side process did you run in response to this?
Well, we started pretty broad, and we approached, over 50 firms, both strategic and financial, and a lot of the private equity firms specialize in divestitures and turning underserved divisions of companies into these strong standalone entities. So we didn't really want to overlook that possibility at all. But since the company's business was attractive to a lot of technology and legal companies, we also wanted to see what kind of interest we could get from that group of buyers as well.
Right, yeah, it definitely makes sense. We'll almost always go to both financial and strategic buyers unless we're working with some high-growth startup or something else risky along those lines. So what were the – when you're going through and making the marketing materials and everything else, what were the major selling points of this software division?
Well, I think a lot of our pitch was really focused on the strong profile going forward. Since the company was changing from this labor-intensive services company to a much higher margin recurring revenue model with subscription software, we thought it would look a lot more attractive in coming years. But beyond that, there was also the favorable market, a huge rise in the number of legal incidents that required really advanced software, particularly since Sarbanes-Oxley and other similar legislation. And the management team was also quite capable, so that was another point we tried to highlight. They had a proven track record at similar companies. They were really all itching to start their own thing and take an equity stake in a new entity. So that was really attractive to financial sponsors.
Okay, great. And just looking at the business from your point of view, what do you think the potential weaknesses were? So anything that might concern potential buyers, or maybe even anything that, you know, some of the buyers kept asking you guys about when you're going through the sell side process?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest problems for the financial sponsors was the high cost of setting up infrastructure and the administration to operate as its own independent entity. They like everything else about the company, but that point alone caused a lot of difficulty down the road. And on the strategic buyer side, they're really concerned as to whether or not the company can make a transition from being a services company to a true software company. And, you know, for 10 years, it was exclusively services-based, so they were pretty skeptical as to, you know, whether they could effectively switch in, you know, at a moment's notice. So since the company and customers were mostly in financial services, many of the buyers were concerned about how the sale revenue would be in light of the recent market turmoil as well.
Okay, great. And so as the deal was progressing and you were going and contacting all the buyers and everything, what was kind of the process? Can you maybe walk me through who was interested and, you know, who ultimately ended up being the most interested in this company?
Yeah, absolutely. So we got a lot of interest from basically around 10 potential buyers. And then we narrowed that list down mostly based on purchase price after a few rounds of bidding. We had a strategic buyer and a financial sponsor, both willing to pay approximately $400 million. The strategic was more likely to stick with that price, but the financial sponsor could move more quickly and get the deal done faster. So to make sure we got a deal done, we continued discussions and negotiations with both buyers and distributed asset purchase agreements to both.
Okay, great. And so you have both a strategic and a financial sponsor who say they're going to pay about the same amount. And so it sounds like you're negotiating the purchase agreements with both of them at the same time. So who ultimately came out as the winner here? So did one of them come up with a better price or come up with better terms in some way?
Yeah, so this strategic got really hung up on some intellectual property issues as we kind of went down the path of due diligence. Now, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I did a bit of research on some of the patents they were concerned with and connected the lawyers on both sides to discuss it. Unfortunately, they were still thinking over the issues by the time I had to leave. Meanwhile, the financial sponsor didn't care as much about that deal point, but they were concerned about how much the company would cost to operate as a standalone entity. So they did their own calculations on the company's standalone operating expenses, which came out to be much higher than what we were suggesting.
Okay, good. And so did you move forward with them, or did the, you know, disagreement over the expenses stop the deal from happening?
Well, I worked with the division's finance manager to create our own bottoms-up expense model for the company and see what it would really cost. And we found that the PE firm was really conservative in a few cases, and our expenses were around 10% lower than what they had suggested.
Okay, good. So you mentioned that you made this bottoms-up expense model. So maybe could you go into a little bit of detail over what you actually did there?
Yeah, sure. So we started with the basics, you know, just employee salaries, bonus payments, and, you know, option expenses for the standalone company, and then added in around 15% overhead to account for the infrastructure. And the next step was, you know, I started to research the cost of office locations in major cities they were operating in, and then figured in the rent, insurance, and other payments in the model. And we also added in the costs of renting technology such as computers, and also purchasing other software. So finally we looked at the cost of hiring a management team based on the quotes given to us from some executive headhunters and added that in as well.
Okay, great. So the private equity firm has their version of the expenses, and then you have your own version of the expenses. So how did they react to this? Did they move at all on the price or anything?
Yeah, you know, obviously they thought we were being far too conservative with our estimates. So, however, they were willing to settle with us and agree to an EBITDA number that was around 5% higher than what they initially calculated for the standalone figure. So that actually affected the purchase price by quite a bit, since they based it on a multiple of EBITDA. But they were willing to move forward when the strategic was solved.
Okay, great. So by the time you left, what was the status of the deal?
It was still up in the air, and we were in final negotiations with the financial sponsor. So nothing has been announced yet. So, you know, I'm assuming they've probably hit some delays on the way to the finish line.
Yeah, you know, that's pretty typical. I think M&A deals almost always fall apart right near the end, and then, you know, they either stay dead or they somehow come back to life right after that. So, you know, thanks for the overview. That was pretty insightful. Sounds like you've had some great experience there working at the boutique.